let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. We are glad to be with you for episode number 48 on this Monday, September 11th, 2017. Here to guide you through the world of retro wrestling, I am Joe Marotta, alongside the one and the only Michael Quinn. How you doing there, Michael?
Howdy diddy.
How's it going, man?
Good.
Ready for another week of the world of retro wrestling?
Wow. A whole week? A whole week of retro?
A whole week of retro.
Are we going to be on every day this week?
Are we? You know what? They can be. They can play this episode every day.
Yeah, then we're on every week.
Folks, thank you so much, of course, for joining us as always. As we creep toward the end of season 5, Quinn, some big things in store, I understand. Some negotiations for the finale in a couple of weeks.
Spent a lot of money on this one.
Yeah. And folks, of course, here this week, we're going to be talking about some great retro wrestling topics. Before we get to any of that, we want to remind you, as always, to look for us and find us and follow us on the Twitter at OVP Podcast. And on the Twitter, you can tell us anything you want. You can send stuff to us, including the Giphies, Quinn.
Yeah, the Giphies and the moving pictures and whatever you want.
Whatever you want, random thoughts.
Send it over to us.
Absolutely.
You can send over how we were wrong about Mount Rushmore and anything you want.
That's right. You can do that. And of course, you can also do those same things via email.
Yes, email.
Electronic mail.
And you have to have a return address.
Yes, you do. And if you want to do that, it's ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we do have a website, ovppodcast.com. And on that website is our suggestion box.
Yes, among the various links and things that we already have on there, which is basically everything we've ever done, you can tackle the suggestion box.
Tackle.
And when you go to the suggestion box, click suggestions on the top.
Yeah.
And then there's an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And on the Excel spreadsheet, you could put your name, serial number, the topic, and the style of topic or whatever.
Yeah,
the
style.
Segment.
The flavor. Yeah. And we will do our best to get to any of your suggestions. Another place where you could talk to us and any of the other fans that are a part of that community is our Facebook group, Michael Quinn.
Yes, the Facebook group where all the goings and comings and goings and happenings and things, that's where they happen.
On Facebook.
You go on there, you type into Facebook, our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast, but you don't go to the PR page. You can't join that.
No, it's not.
You go to the group.
Right.
And on the group, you hit join, and then we approve you, and then you're in, and then you can join in the fun.
What do they do on there?
Well, they talk to each other about old wrestling.
Perfect. That's what we do on the show.
It's like here, but in like written form.
Yeah, only text form, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And other people get to share their viewpoints instead of the two of us for an hour and 40 minutes.
Two of us knuckleheads.
So, Quinn, not only can they talk to us knuckleheads on the Facebook group, we, in audio form, we're hosted on SoundCloud, but we wouldn't necessarily recommend listening to us there. There's some other places to do that.
Yeah, I don't recommend them because they're always going out of business.
Right.
Like, perpetually. Yeah, they're like the TNA of like sound. Well, anyway, you can go over to Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
And over there, you can subscribe or you can leave a review.
Yep.
If you like the show, leave a 5-star review. If you don't like the show, leave a 5-star review.
Yes.
You can say it sucks, but
it sucks. Just 5 stars.
The 5 stars. Yeah.
Right.
Whatever. So leave that.
Pretend you're Dave Meltzer rating a Japan match.
Right. Just every show is 5 stars.
Exactly.
Just like Dave Meltzer. There's not just that.
No.
Right? You can always go to Google Play Music.
Yeah, because everyone does.
Yeah, Stitcher, FM Player.
Who cares?
Yeah, Otto and Griswold. I don't know.
Yeah, Griswold Radio. Yeah,
it probably exists, actually. But, you know, we're all over the internet, basically.
Yeah, all kinds of places, including theplacetobenation.com. That is the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I heard that somewhere, yeah.
And over there on placetobenation.com, you can check out some great podcasts. There's a Place to Be podcast. They talk about the old stuff too.
Yeah, there's some kind of mother sip of
some kind of gold standard.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of other ones, and one of them is really good. It's on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. It is hosted by one lonely man, and that would be Petey Winson.
Little Petey.
And he hosts Greetings from Allentown, which is a show where he reviews old wrestling shows.
Oh, I like old wrestling.
Me too. We should actually do that sometime.
We should do a podcast about old wrestling.
Old wrestling, yeah. Exactly. So be sure to check out placetobenation.com. And Michael Quinn, to start our show,
yes.
You have the first pick. And this is going to be, why did they bother? And Quinn's going to ask me and ask you folks at home, why they bother with something? What are we talking about today, Michael Quinn?
Well, we got a doozy this week.
Do we?
I'm just going to get straight to the point. Why did they bother with Dino Bravo?
Wait,
like, Joe, like the wrestler, like him in general. Why did they bother with him?
Wait, like, why did WWF have him?
Yes, why did anyone have him?
Well, Dino Bravo is not necessarily a golden child on the internet.
He's no gold standard, that's for sure.
Absolutely not.
He's no mother sip.
No, and I guess we'll do a little bit of background on Dino Bravo.
Unfortunately,
I think we should. Even though he's known as being this, like, Canadian guy, you know, Mr. Canada, basically, Mr. Quebec.
The best of Canada.
He was actually, Quinn, did you know this? He was actually born in Italy.
Well, he's a liar then. he's more like the Italian strongest man or whatever, right?
Yes, his name is Adolfo Bresciano. And unfortunately, he was born in the part of Italy where some of my family, you know, a few generations back, is from Campobasso.
So are you like Joe Bravo?
I could be related to him. That's the scary part here. But anyway, he is perhaps best known as being a very horrible wrestler, I'd say.
One of the worst I've ever seen.
He's a fixture as far as bad wrestlers are concerned from like 86 until like 91.
Yes.
If you want a bad, meaningless mid-card match, Dino Bravo was your guy.
I don't even know why he was in the mid-card. I don't even think he deserved that.
But he was. He was like always like a mid-upper carder.
It's unfortunate. I think the Brooklyn Brawler was a better wrestler than he was.
He might have been, actually.
It's possible, right?
He might have been Brooklyn's strongest man, too, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll briefly gloss over, I guess, his early career. One thing I want to mention is that he actually took the ring name Dino Bravo from another wrestler in like the 60s that used to have it.
So he's not even good enough to like have his own unique name.
Right.
He just rips it off someone else. Yeah. What a piece of crap. Like, seriously.
Bothers you?
On top of the junk that we had to endure, there's that.
We started enduring his WWF junk in the mid-80s. I think it was 85 or 86. I remember you and I watched what must have been one of his first WWF shows, Quinn.
Yeah, where he has the brown hair.
He had the brown hair, and he was announced as the WWF Canadian Heavyweight Champion.
Okay, first of all, when did WWF have a Canadian title?
I think that one night.
Dino Bravo, the Canadian Heavyweight Wrestling Champion. He is a sensational athlete.
Liar! Liar! Liar!
He didn't even have a belt. He had a coat that just said, like, Canadian champion on it.
You always called it the Masters jacket.
Yes, it was the... You know how when you win the Masters, you get the green coat,
yes.
And there's no, like, trophy for the Masters.
No.
It's just the coat, right?
You get the coat.
That was the title
for
Canada.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And he was a face in that, because I think that was at... it was in Canada. I think it was maybe Maple Leaf
I don't know
or something like that.
How Canadians would think of him as a face. He's Italian. He's not even Canadian.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, here's what happened with Dino Bravo. We'll guide the folks there through his WWF career, because he didn't have one after that. So this is the meat and potatoes of him being a visible, and I use this term very loosely, superstar.
Visible and superstar are both loose terms for Dino Bravo.
So after that, like, whatever appearance, I think he was kind of sporadic. Then a big deal was made of him at WrestleMania 3, accompanying the Dream Team, which was Valentine and Beefcake.
Okay, let me say something about this. They're not very good either.
No,
like,
I mean, people act like they are.
I don't have a problem with Valentine, but Beefcake being like a dream team with him, like, how is that a dream team?
I think the main thing that worked with the Dream Team, Quinn, is that Valentine did most of the work and Beefcake only tagged in sometimes, so it made them seem like they were cohesive.
But what about them made them a dream team? Like, a dream team would be like the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan.
Martin Howell's favorite.
Yeah, not, but I'm saying, like, not those two, but regardless, right? Like, so that disbands or whatever, because, you know, the cutting of the hair and all that.
You know what was weird, like, the way they disbanded, though? It was like they won their match and they still, like, kicked Beefcake out, remember?
Well, it had something to do with...
They were mad
Beefcake
at him?
Beefcake wasn't as good or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that was a weird thing.
Look at these three beauties. They've left Brutai inside the ring.
Well, every time I watch that, you can like tell like they were already kicking him out in kayfabe. It was like they were just using this as an excuse.
And
because, you know, Dino Bravo makes him more of a dream team.
Yeah. So then what we had from WrestleMania 3 until about October, November of 87 was the first bad Dino Bravo thing, the new dream team.
Awful.
Accompanied by their manager, Luscious Johnny V. He refers to them as the new dream team.
It looks like a pink nightmare.
Greg Valentine.
How?
Like, and Dino Bravo.
Who thought that that would be good? Who? Like, who? He sucked. He was never good. And he never was good after, and he never was good before. What, in that moment, would say, you know what the dream team needs? Dino Bravo.
Yeah, screw this Brutus Beefcake guy, this younger, up-and-coming guy.
Right, right.
Get rid of him, because what Valentine needs, and what the fans demand, is Dino Bravo, this unheard-of, like, guy from Canada.
The Canadian champion. And I believe that's where he started to bleach blonde his hair, right?
Was it that? That is correct. It was, he already had it by then.
Which I don't understand why he needed to, because it's not like Beefcake had blonde hair.
I think the thing was, is from the 50s through the 80s, the bleach blonde hair was usually a heel, did that?
Yeah, but Beefcake was a heel in there, and he didn't have bleach blonde hair.
He's like, already balding at age like 27, though, so I mean, I don't know if you wanted to mess with that.
Yeah.
So, by the end of 87, Quinn, what happens is Johnny V leaves, thankfully, because he wasn't that good either. They disband the new Dream Team.
Thank God.
Really. Valentine goes off with Jimmy Hart, and then, to really make matters better for Dino Bravo, Frenchie Martin becomes his manager, and this is where we get phase two of Dino Bravo's annoying career.
Probably the most horrible of Dino Bravo. This is when the push with the lifting of the weights and Jesse the Body's involved.
Right.
715 pounds. Unofficially on the bar.
This guy sucks, Joe. Like, he is literally, like, one of the worst wrestlers on the roster, full of stars.
Absolutely. You're totally right, Quinn. Yeah. I cannot dispute that at all. He actually ate up about 25 minutes of time on TV at Rumble 88, lifting weights.
Mm.
Did no favors, right? Then at WrestleMania 4, we are subject to a really crappy match with him and Don Morocco.
Yeah. Oh.
Then at SummerSlam 88, we're subjected to a very crappy rematch between him and Don Morocco.
Because, you know, the first time was so great. Let's say it again, right?
Right. And then at WrestleMania 5, we are subject to him beating, at WrestleMania, Ronnie Garvin. So,
well,
that's like the irresistible shit, maybe the immovable shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, what's weird about that is, didn't Ronnie Garvin feud with Greg the Hammer Valentine, his former tag partner?
Right afterwards, yeah.
So that's strange. I guess, like, you know, they just were like, Dino Bravo, not good enough.
It's kind of funny.
Let's go to his tag partner.
So here's what happens after WrestleMania 5, Michael.
Crap.
This is the end of the Frenchie Martin era, and now we move into, I might consider this the worst, the Jimmy Hart Dino Bravo pairing, where Bravo, until he leaves, is just a big lackey that sucks.
I've did multiple push-ups with this big 460-pound man sitting on my back.
He's just an earthquake goon, basically.
For like the rest of 89, for all of 90.
For all of time.
Into 91. I think they should have just stopped Dino Bravo's run with 88, and that would have been it.
All he was at that point when he was like the goon, he was like literally this waste of time on Superstars. Like, oh, we got to kill like 5 minutes, send Dino Bravo out to beat up some jobber, and no one cares.
Yeah, and didn't he injure Bret Hart in 89?
Yes, he famously, if you watch Wrestling with Shadow, Brett's telling Beans Hard or Fireman Hard or some Hard in a car about how like Dino Bravo like screwed him over, basically.
You know, I broke my sternum there, and I had to lose that match by count out in front of all my Canadian fans. Devastating, right?
It was so devastating.
But that's the thing, is like, speaking of his wrestling, right? Not even Brett could get a good match out of
not
this
only
guy.
Could he not get a good match out, but he wasn't even safe. He wasn't.
He was Mr. Steroids from like 88 until the cigarette incident.
And we'll get to that. But
we will.
That was literally all there was to him. It's like, look at these steroids, everyone. Like, that's all there is.
It's true, though. See, people, I've seen a couple of people here and there, perhaps you have too, Quinn, that ironically are acting like he was good or something.
They need to stop. Will you stop? Like, it's apropos here.
Will you stop?
Here's the thing with him. Yes, he was a good heel in the sense that there was nothing to like about him. I'll give him that. His promos were annoying. He was like, he wasn't likable. But you know who's like a good heel that you can appreciate? Harley Race.
Or like the Macho Man.
Yeah, exactly. Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Right.
Like, Bravo's not good to watch. There's nothing fun to watch about Dino Bravo. Okay,
I don't think he's being intentionally hateable. He just is. Nobody, like, he comes out like, I don't want to watch this. Like, that's how I feel.
Is there a good Dino Bravo match?
No, I've never seen one ever. Like, and not even like, I'm not even talking like I'm expecting like 5-star matches. I'm not even expecting 4 or 3-star matches.
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen anything beyond like 2 with that guy.
He had this is going to sound nutty, but I think he had a pretty decent one with the Warrior on WrestleFest 90 Coliseum video. That might have been the best match I've ever seen him have.
Who cares?
And that's what I think of that.
Okay, well that... If that's the highlight of his career wrestling-wise, I guess you have a valid point there, Quinn.
Right.
I just want to wrap up his career because it's kind of short. You know, okay. He kind of gets snuffed out, if you will. So as we move towards the end of 1990, right after the Survivor Series 90 last week, we did that Superstars.
Right.
And he's still, like, barking about Hulk Hogan and stuff.
He thinks he's so good. Like, he thinks, oh, I'm a veteran now, right? Yeah. Like, I can beat up Hulk Hogan. Like, what? No. No. Never. Never. No one ever thought you were good enough to touch anybody that was even, like, the Intercontinental Champion.
It's true. His biggest win, I think, was probably against Don Morocco or Ronnie Garvin.
Who cares?
Exactly. And then he looks horrible at WrestleMania 7,
yes,
Quinn.
Yes, he
your
comes
thoughts?
Out and he looks like a beaver or a chipmunk and his hair is, like, slicked back. And I'm like, what the hell happened to this guy?
He has, like, cigarette face.
Look away. I'm hideous.
Okay, I think now's the time, because that's kind of like the end-ish of Dino Bravo.
Yeah, the basic thing with him is after WrestleMania 7, you didn't see him much more. He did a few returns in early 92, mid-92, with the brown hair.
I'm sorry for everyone who ever saw a match.
And he was just
that.
A big... You know how Don Morocco looked in, like, 93?
Yeah, he's, like, super fat. He looked like that. His face looks strange, and just, his, like, hair's different.
Big puff and everything. Yeah. And then in February of 1993...
So... We come to find out that Dino Bravo was in bed with the mafia.
Yes.
And he was selling illegal cigarettes, meaning like those without the tax stamp on it, basically,
yes.
Right?
Contraband.
So illegal contraband,
in Quebec.
Right? So apparently this dumbass decided, you know what? I'm going to screw over the mafia.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't really need to say what happened to him, essentially. Like, what do you think would happen to him?
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But back to his wrestling. So. Did he ever do anything good?
No.
So they shouldn't have bothered having
him
that long.
What a sad end to a bad career.
I know.
And like, there's nothing positive I can say about Dino Bravo.
There really isn't. In fact, before we wrap up here, our pilot episode of our show, which was really just a sound test that I was helping Quinn do something on a different podcast he was doing at the time. And it's not a thing, so don't look for it. Quinn's not anywhere else.
It's not real.
It's not like an ongoing thing. But I was showing Quinn how to use the equipment and stuff like that. And our pilot episode, which is about 5 minutes, it was just us talking at like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Was specifically on the topic of Dino Bravo,
yes,
and how much he sucks.
We had to eventually talk about him again. And I thought, why did they bother the perfect topic there. And I guess to close it out, why do you think they bothered?
I don't know. I guess maybe he was reliable in terms of he would put anyone over that they asked him to.
That doesn't make it worth it.
Maybe he never missed dates that he wasn't supposed to
great.
Miss.
Here's the problem with that.
Yeah.
This is a time when everyone was a star in this company.
Well, I mean, for the most part.
There is no room for people like him in the late 80s. I'm serious.
And define people like him, just so I have a feel
guys
for...
Guys that are just mid-level nothing. Like, seriously.
Insignificant nothing, right?
Yeah, I get it. He was in the business for a while. I'm not, like, disputing his, like, tenure or whatever, but, like, tenure doesn't make you good.
No, that's certainly true,
just because he was, like, around for, like, 15 years or something doesn't make him, like, oh, well, I guess he should be in WWE. Like, he just should have never been there. He never did anything significant.
No, no big moments. He's not a part of any good matches.
No.
His career, it was so long for the tiny amount that he accomplished.
And that's kind of the reason he gets a why did they bother, because that's why it's so questionable, is because he just never left. He was just there for so long.
Yeah, and it's not like he was like there for a really long time, but also did good things like a Tito Santana or somebody like that, you know what I mean, where he actually did have a significant career at some point. Mm-hmm. He literally never did anything that actually mattered, from what I can understand.
He was just a waste.
He was just kind of a waste. So folks, we want to know what you think of Dino Bravo. Are we wrong about something? Did he have a good match that we don't know about?
I don't know about those.
And do you think they should have bothered keeping him as long as I did? Let us know. You can do that on Twitter. You can email us. You can go to our Facebook group. Quinn, let's go smoke an illegal cigarette. And when we come back, we've got Mount Rushmore and Death Valley. Back after this. Is there ever, like, there's no good Dino Bravo match? Like, literally.
I don't know of any that
exists.
You
can't name one. Even, like, Bret Hart couldn't do it.
His career is so forgettable. And you know what's another thing? It's like, now I'm, like, trying to think of, like, Dino Bravo stuff, and I keep interchanging him with, like, that Greg Valentine-Ronnie Garvin feud.
They're not related.
They're not. But it's just weird because you could, like, imagine him there.
He's not,
like,
even in the same class as Greg Valentine.
He's not even the same class of Hands of Trash Ronnie Garvin.
That's hard because Garvin sucks.
From Harley Race to Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair to The Rock, Sting to Steve Austin, you're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to be with you for episode number 48 here on Monday, September 11th, 2017. Quinn, it's time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley.
Is it?
It is, and I suppose I should mention, I forgot to at the top of the show, this week we are doing all of our own picks for the first time in forever.
Yeah.
Next week, our second to last episode before the finale, we're doing all your picks.
Yes.
Next week will be all fan requested segments.
Fan favorite episode, I guess.
Exactly. So this is our last chance to kind of get our kicks in here and just pick stuff that we wanted to talk about. And Quinn, I have the pick for the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley. And this week's topic is ring announcers.
Oh boy.
Now, a good ring announcer, Michael, should get you kind of hyped up, but not be too much of a superstar in their own right.
Right.
But should get you hyped up for either a title change, for the match that's to happen. They should not make too many mistakes, perhaps. They should be clear, well spoken, but give you that overall feel of like, oh man, I want to see this match.
Yeah,
you
concise.
Know? Concise.
Yeah.
So Quinn, I have the pick. You have the stick. What do you got?
So best.
Best.
Best. Well, my first pick would have to be Howard Finkel.
There is absolutely no argument there. Howard Finkel is the gold standard, if
it
you
will. It doesn't get any better than Howard Finkel. I mean, like, when he gives me the rules to the Royal Rumble, I, like, get goosebumps. That's how good he is.
Yep.
To be eliminated, a wrestler must be thrown out of the ring, over the top rope, and onto the floor. The one wrestler remaining in the ring after all 30 have entered will be the winner.
And of course, you know, anytime he announces a new champion,
yeah,
you know, and new whatever it might be, right? Whether it's heel or face, with Finkel it sounded important.
Right.
With Finkel it sounded larger than life.
It sounded like history was being made whenever, like, he announced a Dino Bravo match, even.
Yes. Yeah, like, and he nice callback.
Yeah.
And he had an authoritative voice.
Yeah.
Where it actually sounded like this guy knew who he was announcing.
Right.
You know, he knew how much they weighed.
Yes.
He knew where they were from. He knew the rules and stipulations.
Yes. And he could even, when he needed to, play up stuff like the whole Harvey Whippleman thing.
Yes.
Like, and how they feuded.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He is by far the best ring announcer that there ever has been in wrestling.
He was good for anything.
He was good for anything. I think he's a unanimous, no question about it. We just put him in. And
he's the George Washington on this Rushmore.
There's Howard Finkel, and then there's everybody else.
Right.
So for number one, Howard Finkel. There are other good ones.
Right.
I think it's fair to say that. Not any of them imitate Howard Finkel, which is the cool thing.
Yeah.
Anyone that else that is good in their own way.
Right.
You know who's like really good?
Who?
Gary Michael Capetta was always solid.
Yeah, I always liked Gary Michael Capetta, and he was in WCW and WWF.
He was. He was in WWF in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah,
and
even in like the original like Vince McMahon era, like Vince McMahon Jr. era.
Junior era. He was there.
Yeah.
And he had a different voice. He kind of had that more of like that old-timey boxer voice, boxing
announcer.
Yeah, a little
bit. Yeah, he was closer.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
you know,
a little closer to a boxer announcer.
This next match, that type of thing, where it's very nasal, very narrow, you know.
Yeah.
From Puerto Rico, 248 pounds, Max Rivera.
Matt Rivera.
It is great because it makes a big fight feel or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's really, really good. Do you have another one you want to volley at me?
Here's one I just want to try you, but you're going to laugh at me because I can never remember his name. It's that guy from WrestleMania 10.
Bill Dunn.
That guy was okay, actually.
I don't know. You think so?
I don't think he's like Death Valley, but I think he's like, he's worth conversation.
He kind of sounded like he needed a cough drop all the time.
From Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
But I don't know. He
from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, but I always envision like Owen Hart's music after he like says something for some reason. Doink! Or something.
Well, he's also at King of the Ring 94.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill Dunn was their backup announcer from, I think, 93 until about 95-ish.
Yeah, but
96.
I
he was okay.
They used him a lot.
They did. He was before Tony Chimmel became their secondary announcer. It was him.
Right. And he was just always kind of there. I don't know what Fink was doing at the time.
Maybe they were just lightening his workload a little bit.
Yeah.
He was okay, but I mean, Gary Michael Capetta, I think, would be
there,
right?
I want to throw it out there for conversation.
I think Gary Michael Capetta is a solid number two. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that would really make a number two spot.
Before we put him on, we need to discuss others. Like, what about Melissa Santos, who does our show?
She does introduce us.
Yeah.
You know, Melissa Santos is an interesting case because, first of all, I know people are going to be like, well, what's retro this week, you know?
Well, this is my thing.
Go ahead.
If you're making any top list, you kind of have to include everything.
Well, yes, that's true to an extent where if she's already established herself as one of the best,
right,
then it doesn't matter.
With ring announcing, it's not like it's like a career where like she could ruin it or something.
Exactly.
Like, unless her like voice stopped working and she's still announced. I don't know. Like, I don't know how else it would, like, you know what she is at this point.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
There's no changing it.
And, you know, what's interesting is when we first started watching Lucha season one, one of the things I noticed, and it's not physical, okay, even though Melissa Santos is a very beautiful woman.
Yes.
Was how good she was at ring announcing. I know that sounds stupid, but she's really good.
Okay, she's all the things we named, like concise, to the point, just it makes it sound important.
Energetic.
All that stuff. Energetic. But also, she could do the stuff that like Fink we talked about with the like, I don't like this person, like with Marty the Moth and all that crap.
And with Pentagon Jr.
Yeah.
She always announced him with that disdain in her voice after he attacked her that one time.
Yes, she kept the story going, right? Like, she was good at continuity.
Absolutely.
And that was, to me, what's excellent about it. We're talking about her like she doesn't do it anymore, but like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what's great about that kind of ring announcer.
And her opponent from Jalapa, Veracruz, Mexico, Pentagon Jr.
And then also with Cage, you know, they're dating in real life, so she would always get a little extra excited when she introduced Cage.
The crowd kind of knew because it's the age of social media. So
5'5", 9.
Yeah. She'd be a little more excited about him.
Introducing first, from the 5'5", 9, they call him Cage.
I think Melissa Santos is actually like a real, like a legitimate contender in Rushmore.
I'll tell you this. In an era, and I don't mean this in a sexual, you know, discriminatory way, because I really don't, because I think Mike McGurk was really good also, but in an era where everyone's trying to be the next Lillian Garcia, and they all suck for the most part,
right?
Meaning they don't sound good doing it. It's not a sex thing,
because
there's plenty of bad male ring announcers, too.
It's either you're good at it or you're not.
Correct.
That's not a female,
not a
male, or
here.
Whatever. Yeah.
Melissa is the best female ring announcer I've ever heard, and one of the best ring announcers I've ever heard. However, I think if we're going to talk about her, we at least need to get Gary Michael Capetta on as number two.
Okay, let's put him on.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
All right, so for number two, Gary Michael Capetta.
Who else do we have here? We have David Penzer.
He was good, too. He was the guy that took over in WCW in the mid-90s.
Yes.
His opponent from Chicago, Illinois, the total package, Lex Luger!
Through the end of WCW and then into TNA, right?
Did he do some TNA? I don't remember necessarily. But yeah. David Penzer, always thought he was great.
Like, solid.
He made it sound important. He's very professional. I never liked his stupid cummerbund that was like colorful or whatever, but that was like his gimmick, I guess.
He was good. What do you think about Tony Chimmel?
Tony Chimmel.
The Raw and SmackDown announcer starting in 97-ish when Finkel stopped doing it as much. And he kind of did it all the way into the 2000s.
Yeah, he's okay.
He was all right, right? The following contest is, that very kind of dry voice. It wasn't that good. You know who's really good, actually, is Bobby Cruz.
Yes, ROH. Bobby Cruz.
Bobby Cruz is awesome. He's still doing it.
Yeah.
He's like been their ring announcer forever.
Bobby Cruz. Wow. Yeah, he is up there to me.
Introducing first, from Sin City, weighing 218 pounds, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels.
Considering he only did Ring of Honor, he could like go anywhere. Like that guy is great.
I met him, actually, at ROH.
Did you?
I did.
Okay, yeah. I think I was there when you met him. Yeah.
I met Bobby Cruz, and nice guy, too.
Nice guy, fantastic ring announcer.
Really?
I have no issue with Bobby Cruz. But I don't know if he's better than Melissa Santos.
Melissa Santos is good, and I'm not just saying that because she does our intro here. We got her to do the intro because she's the best.
We sought her out because she was good.
She's really good.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to do it, I think, because
I think Melissa has definitely got to be on there.
She contributes to the show without taking it over.
Right.
Which is what a ring announcer should do. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't detract from it.
Yeah.
And make a horrible mistake every time they do something, like some others have.
I've never seen her make a mistake, but that's an edited show.
It's an edited show, but one way or another, she's got the talent, she's got the ability, she does a very good job at it, and I don't see how she can get knocked off, and I don't care if Lucha just started a couple of years ago, I think she's one of the best ring announcers I've ever seen.
Agreed.
Put her on?
Yep.
Number three, Melissa Santos. Well, you've mentioned Bill Dunn.
Yeah, Bill Dunn.
But I think David Penzer is better than Bill Dunn.
But what about Bobby Cruz?
Bobby Cruz is great.
Yeah.
He really is great.
Yeah.
And I know that he was never in one of the mainstream promotions.
Yes.
But obviously you're hearing clips of the people we're talking about as we do this.
Right.
So it's not like you don't get a feel for what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, Bobby Cruz, that's not bad, really. I think he's better than Penzer and then Bill Dunn, definitely. I don't think Bill Dunn's that good.
I don't know. I kind of like him, actually.
Really? The guy that just announces Owen Hart all the time because of King of the Ring?
He's so good, though. I don't know. I'm surprised.
From Calgary!
I'm surprised you don't like
Sperling.
Him. Yeah, Cy Sperling.
Cy Sperling!
Think about it, though. He made Cy Sperling sound like a big deal.
I can't know. There's no way he's going. You know, Donnie Wahlberg was a great guest ring announcer.
I was just going to say, Donnie Wahlberg should be in Mount Rushmore. No, I'm just
kidding.
Can you
imagine if he's number four?
Yokozuna!
Oh, man. I might go with Bobby Cruz, actually.
It's either Bobby Cruz or Penzer. I think so.
I'm trying to think of any other notable ring announcers.
Because
that are
for whatever
good.
Reason, you can't agree on Bill Dunn. But
I don't think he's that good. I never did.
Okay.
What? I didn't know you. I've known you 18 years.
I just always thought he sounded fine. This. Yeah, I was great with him.
Quinn's a big Bill Dunn fan this whole time. Is that Kevin Dunn's like brother?
Maybe.
Then no.
He could have been in Well Done. I don't know. Yeah, Bill Dunn's not bad though.
Bobby Cruz though, Quinn.
Yeah. I guess the only thing going against Bobby Cruz is like that whole he hasn't been in a big promotion thing.
Yeah, but Bill Dunn was like a WWF announcer for a couple of years. Bobby Cruz has an outstanding body of work.
Is he still working? Like I don't
he's
watch
still
Ring of Honor.
Announcer.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he is.
He's really good.
He's fantastic. You know, Lee Marshall was a ring announcer.
Tony the Tiger?
Yeah, in AWA, I think, or maybe he was only a commentator, but in WWF, he used to do some shows.
Oh, yes, you're right. I do remember that.
And I like Lee Marshall. I never got the Lee Marshall hate.
I never got it either. If he could be Tony the Tiger, then how could he be bad at
anything?
He's
great!
Yeah, he's really great.
Thank you.
I think David Penzer, actually, it's like we've talked all these things, but I can't think of a bad thing about David Penzer, in all honesty.
Yeah, you know what?
Like,
David Penzer was the voice of WCW ring announcer wise during their best period.
Right, in their height.
You know what? David Penzer is a good number four, and he was also a part of TNA. I think he's still doing TNA.
Are you sure about that?
I don't know for sure, but I think he is.
Does he still wear the cummerbund?
He probably does.
The rainbow cummerbund?
I think so.
Wow.
David Penzer's good for number four here, because he presided over that whole NWO era.
Yeah, and I just envision, like, his voice.
Yes.
Or hear it, I guess. When I think of WCW back then.
In the same way that you do with Fink for their golden era.
Right.
You think of David Penzer.
Or even the Attitude Era.
Or even the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
You think of David Penzer for the 90s version of WCW.
Right.
Gary Michael Capetta and then David Penzer. Yeah, you know what? That's fair.
Yeah.
I'll put him on.
David Penzer.
You want to do it, number
yeah,
four?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty. Well, you know our friend Donnie likes it when we recap things.
Yes.
So here is our Mount Rushmore of ring announcers. We've got Howard Finkel because,
I mean,
who else?
Who else, yeah.
Gary Michael Capetta, an underrated voice of WWF, WWF.
And WCW.
And WCW. Great. Different, yeah. Totally different voice.
Yeah.
Melissa Santos, yes, the voice of Lucha Underground.
And the indies as
well. Yeah. She's so unique at it.
Yes.
She is. She has her own style.
Yeah.
She's very good at it. She happens to do the intro to our podcast.
Yes, but she really is good. Like,
she's
excellent. No bias. Like,
no.
I when I first heard her, I thought, that's like one of the best ring announcers I've ever seen.
Yep, absolutely. She puts emotion and passion into it.
Right.
Fantastic. And then David Penzer, another under-the-radar guy, you know, the WCW ring announcer that you would notice, though, if he wasn't there. He was solid.
David Penzer was old, reliable.
Old, reliable.
Yeah.
Very good. So, Quinn, you had the first pick for the best. I get to have the first pick for the worst. And I'm going right for the jugular, Michael.
Oh, boy.
I am going right to the top. I am going to the highest paid, probably, ring announcer ever. A waste of space, a waste of alleged talent, and a waste of money for WCW in the 1990s, Quinn. Michael Buffer.
Well, yes. Horrible. Like, all the garbage things they could have done, right?
Right.
They decide, like, you know, we need the biggest, best ring announcer of the time, I guess.
He was, because he was
boxing.
Very notable and very good for boxing. He was a great boxing announcer. I'm not going to...
But for this?
God!
For wrestling?
Why did they spend so much money to have this fool trot in once a month on pay-per-view and announce the main event?
So, he what was he paid, like $1 million a year or something?
I think at one point he was paid like
our match.
A very absurd amount of money, maybe $1 million per appearance.
Oh, God.
And people wonder why WCW was hemorrhaging money and going out of business. Now, this guy brought his freaking, I'm fired up about this, boxing shtick.
Yes.
To the squared circle of wrestling.
This is a guy which I'm not sure if I can verify, but he would do this kind of thing. Like, for example, he would announce Ric Flair as Rick Nature Boy Flair, like he stuff like he
probably
would just,
did,
like,
yes.
Make up shit.
And then he was weighing in at 247 and 1/4 pound in the purple trunks.
Yeah, the quarter pound. Like, what the? There wasn't a weigh in before this, Michael Buffer. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
And he would sometimes make up nicknames and like accomplishments. He is the man that defeated Haystacks Calhoun.
It's like, what? Who? What? Did that really happen, or did it happen recently? I don't know.
From the Motor City, Detroit, Michigan, at 276 and 1/2 pounds, a former member of the tag team world champion Steiner Brothers, ladies and gentlemen, Big Papa Pump.
And he just overall, it was just too bombastic. It didn't fit wrestling.
No, it didn't.
And he would get things wrong, like Bret Hitman Clark and all that.
That's my favorite, is the Bret Hitman Clark.
To face the reigning United States heavyweight champion, Bret Hitman Clark.
He didn't even know, like, what was happening.
No, he was literally there to say, like, 15 sentences.
He always had a cue card.
Yep, and then collect his stupid paycheck with his gray hair and leave.
Terrible.
He was a waste.
He contributed nothing.
Zero.
Yeah.
Because what they were going for, obviously, was that big fight feel, but it wasn't organic.
The problem was, is they used him on everything. So, like, World War III with Michael Buffer. It's like, why is it at this pay-per-view? Like, I get it if it was, like, at Starcade or something, but it was at every pay-per-view.
He was at everything.
Yeah, and he was even on Nitro.
he was sometimes, yeah. right? For like a big main event or something. He has to go on as number one, right? I'm not yeah. crazy, am I?
You're probably not. And about just one thing on the over the top, I feel like I remember him like making shit up about Hulk Hogan, like when he came to the ring at that.
Always!
Yeah.
He always made shit up. He yeah. like listed off accomplishments. He would get their weight different than like yeah. what anyone else would
right.
say.
Yeah.
You know, and he would always mention that what attire they were wearing and
yes.
all this weird
oh,
shit.
In the black trunks.
Yeah,
and
dude, it's not boxing, yeah. okay? Like, we're ready to rumble, okay? We're yeah. already ready. He's got to be number one. And folks, by the way, at any time, let us know your Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of ring announcers. You can do that by tweeting at us. You can email us or, of course, go to our Facebook group. All right, Quinn, are we putting him in?
Yes.
All right, number one.
Die, die, die.
God, awful. What do you got for number two, Quinn?
Well, the only logical number two would have to be Vivian Garcia.
She's a number two,
or Lillian right? Garcia, as she was born yeah. with. But
you know what I have to say about her?
What?
Championship!
Exactly.
This is, okay, we touched upon briefly the gender roles here. We put Melissa Santos in.
Right.
For one of the best. So do not misconstrue this yes. as gender bias here.
No.
She sucked.
She was really, really bad. She never pronounced things right.
She had a weird cadence. Where, yeah. Like, this is what I hear. This is the 2000s for me. Pounds. Championship.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not melodious. It doesn't sound important. Nope. It doesn't get you excited. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, look, when Fink announced the new world champion, we said this, it sounded like it mattered.
Yeah.
With a new champion.
And from Montreal, Ontario, Canada, she is the Divas Champion, Money!
That's what she sounds like to me. Just, yeah. Nah-hoo.
Yeah,
it's awful.
What's funny is she said herself she doesn't think she's that good.
I know.
Which is okay, I guess.
No,
but
never said she said she's good, you know?
Yeah, but exactly.
Still.
But a lot of the respect for her is simply like tenure.
Again, with the tenure, like
right.
Gino Bravo.
Right, again, like, it doesn't make her good.
No.
I don't know why she was employed for so long. I guess they just didn't give a shit or something.
I guess they didn't.
Yeah.
She would get weird stuff wrong. She would misannounce stuff.
Here's your winner and still the World Wrestling Federation champion, Chris Holly.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find a clip of it, where she said Kurt Angle was from Pittsburgh, Philadelphia.
Making his way to the ring.
She was not good for the first like 2 years also.
Oh,
other
yeah.
things.
She's awful.
Awful. And she just hung around, but she always detracted from a big moment for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and then she would get into her like singing.
Great singer.
She's a great singer, but I don't know, like, it just bothered me that they would like do that, but she's the ring announcer. Like, it takes away from what she is.
I guess she also did some backstage interviews occasionally.
Yeah,
but she was
that's
fine.
What I mean. My point is that she didn't seem like this was her full-time gig for whatever reason.
Well, it wasn't. That's the yeah. thing. But yeah, she never seemed quite invested, I guess
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. She is probably a real sweet person in real life. But
I don't
man,
have a problem with her as a person.
No.
It's just she sucked at her job.
She was bad at it. I'm
yeah.
sorry. And not like, look, it's ring announcing. I know it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But you can either take what it is and do something really great with it.
Yeah.
And be really distinguishing, like Howard Finkel was, like David Penzer, like Gary Michael Capetta, and
right.
even like Melissa Santos, or you could take it and just kind of like, you know,
yeah,
and,
exactly.
and just, it's unnotable.
Just kind of phone it in.
If she had only done it for like a year or two, you know what? She probably wouldn't even come to mind as one of the worst.
Right.
It's because she did
it's
the
like
same
15
thing.
15 years or something.
Exactly. For so long
yeah.
and not ever really being good at it.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to put her on. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it.
All right. So for number two, Lillian Garcia.
Die, die, die.
What about, and I know you said you liked her, but Mike McGurk.
What's your
Let
problem?
Me make my case.
Yeah,
I just she feels yelly for some reason. And like
kind of yelly, yes.
She, even though she's yelly at the same time, it feels like she's talking into a bathroom or something. Like
Unhailing from Calgary, yeah. Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know, like, why? Like, nobody else sounded like that, but it's just like,
true.
And the whole, like, ring conductor or whatever she was, I don't know, like,
circus conductor. You know, that's interesting you say that. For folks, if you don't know, for any viewers that don't know, Mike McGurk was actually the WWF's first female ring announcer, Mike is short for Michelle in this case. She's daughter of Leroy McGurk, a wrestler. She started in like 87, 88. She was there until about 93. She was their B announcer, basically. It was Finkel, and then it was her.
She was on a lot of Coliseum home videos.
She did Challenge, and Bobby always made fun of her every single time.
Yeah, that's like that whole like Farrah Fawcett, and he's says more like Leaky Fawcett, stuff like that.
He always busted balls,
and they tried to make her like a announcer like with Gorilla and stuff.
In 87, 88, she did some commentary, not good.
I don't think that's very good sportsmanship there, Bruce. Could you agree with that?
The Herc is doing a fabulous job.
She kind of is on the same level to me as Bill Dunn.
I think she's worse than Bill Dunn.
I think she's just as good as Bill Dunn.
No, yes. Get out of here.
Absolutely, she's fine.
Joe.
You know who's worse, Quinn?
Who? Tell me.
I think you'll agree. Remember Justin Roberts?
Yeah, I mean, he is like, he's like whatever, but I think that for considering the time, they didn't need a whatever. They needed like somebody good.
Yeah, I know.
And he to me, he was like Michael Cole Jr., like, doing ring announcing. Like,
John Cena!
He was just a little dweeb. I just like him.
Remember when Daniel Bryan choked him out?
Yeah, with his tie.
and then
Daniel Bryan got fired
in real life.
Like, for a month to save face. They, like, I swear I've heard this story from Daniel Bryan and Justin Roberts and basically everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally they told Daniel Bryan, like, listen, we're going to fire you for like a month. Just go do indies or something. It's like, you're coming back. It's just, we have to do this.
I don't think he was very good at all.
Yeah, he wasn't like boisterous enough or something. And he just seemed like a baby.
240 pounds. He is the WWE champion. John Cena!
Right. And now, folks, if you're wondering, well, why are we talking about the quality of their voice? I'll tell you why.
That's their job.
That's their job. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what they say is less important than how they say it in most cases.
Yeah.
Although they want to say it correctly, but that's only one part of it. It's also how you say it.
Yeah, there's a cadence and like a loudness, I guess, a boisterousness of it.
Finkel had it.
Yeah, it's like that importance, how you were saying with Finkel.
And Capetta had it in a different way. That narrow but projecting, you know?
But Roberts over here,
he just sounded like if I did ring announcing, honestly.
Yeah.
And I don't have a horrible voice or anything.
And I know we do a podcast and our voices, I guess, matter, but at the same time, we're not professional.
Yeah, like, we're not getting paid
announcers.
Tons of money by a multi-billion dollar corporation
to do that.
Exactly, which leads me to JoJo.
And
Come on!
You like her?
She's okay.
I'm like indifferent to JoJo.
I liked Eden.
She was
Eden Styles.
Again, okay. Like, her and JoJo actually, to me, are on the same level.
Oh, that's blasphemy.
No, it isn't.
No.
It's just Joe.
Eden was so much better than JoJo.
No.
Yes!
JoJo was better.
Well, then Mike McGurk is better than Bill Dunn. Bill Dunn might be one of the worst, actually.
Get out of here! What are you talking
about?
Dude,
he's a cough drop, man.
No, you're wrong.
Laryngitis over there.
At least he made it sound important. I mean, like we said, he can
make... Oh, yeah, good. He made Cy Sperling sound
important.
That's
fine. Yeah. You're going to really try to put him in here? No.
Can I?
Get out of here.
I'm trying. Bill Dunn.
No! He's fine.
I think we go Justin Roberts for number three.
Okay, Justin Roberts is fine. I can accept that.
My main reason is, you said a lot of it, is his voice didn't work for being a
just
ring
not
announcer.
Not important enough.
Would have probably been a great commentator, backstage announcer.
He was essentially like a boy. Like that. Like, yeah. He was like that like Michael Cole dweeb that you make fun of in the back.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate, but you know, he wasn't that guy. I thought he would be good.
I mean, he honestly looked like he was brought in to be like in the same vein as Sean Mooney, like that kind of thing.
And I'm sure he's a great guy. Another thing where I'm sure he's a great guy in real life. I don't know why they let him go. Remember they let him go a few years ago? No real reason.
Yeah. I think they were like, he's been here forever and he's not really contributing much. And
yeah,
bye.
They did that. They should have done that with Lillian.
Yeah. But again, tenure, whatever.
So I don't know. I'll go with him for number three if you're okay with it.
I'll go with him.
Justin Roberts for number three.
Die, die, die.
We got one more, so I guess Bill Dunn.
No. And no, I think Mike McGurk.
No.
Yes.
Absolutely not. Mel Phillips.
Yes, Mel Phillips.
Their other backup announcer.
Now, I actually need you to explain to me why you hate him so much, because I'm not fully sold on this. Like,
he's another one where his cadence is pretty bad.
Yeah.
He just doesn't sound like he gives a crap, really. He's not someone you can envision announcing anything important.
He's also a terrible person.
Yeah, with the feet fetish and the...
Yeah,
the,
whatever all that was.
The kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was just bad, and anytime I ever saw him crop up on something I was watching, I was like, oh, man, really?
Yeah.
You have to deal with
it
him.
Just said, he made it seem mediocre. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, I guess this isn't important because Mel Phillips is doing it.
Weighing 280 pounds, the Junkyard.
Quinn, I'm glad we really take this so seriously, you know? We're tackling the hard-hitting issues here on OVP.
Yes.
So if you expected the next Dave Meltzer, you're in the wrong spot, folks.
Mm.
I would have to say that Mike McGurk is much better than Bill Dunn.
But are any of those people better than JoJo?
No. But is she even the worst, though? That's, She's not even...
Okay, I think those are the three we have to deal with. That's the problem here, right?
I am not putting Mike McGurk...
Why?
What's so bad about her?
She's just not good. Listen, it's just, again, it's that unimportant, like, she just feels like she's collecting a paycheck. She sounds like she's talking into a toilet.
That's a point in her disfavor, yes.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, what else, the stupid, like...
The ringleader costume.
Ringleader costume, like, it's a little much for me.
Her name is Mike.
Her hair, like, looks like a hat instead of actual hair.
I like her, though.
Why?
Why wouldn't I? She's great.
Leaky faucet, really?
Come on, Bill Dunn sounds like he just ate a box of nickels.
I will not accept Bill Dunn.
I'm accepting Bill Dunn.
Okay, wait. If you won't accept Bill Dunn and I won't accept...
Here we go, the bartering.
You won't accept Mike McGurk and I won't accept Bill Dunn. JoJo seems like the logical, like, only one left.
About Mel Phillips.
Oh, Mel Phillips.
Fuck him with the kids and the toes.
You know who he reminds me of for whatever reason?
Count Chocula?
the Yankees, like, announcer now. You know who I'm talking
about. Fans?
Yeah,
that guy?
Fons?
Oh, like, fans?
Yeah.
Come out to Yankee Stadium for a $1 Dunkin' Donut gift card.
Yeah.
Can we put Mel Phillips in,
fine,
please?
Okay, I'll settle on Mel
it's
Phillips.
He's also a terrible person. The other people aren't.
He's like,
okay,
the Chris of ring announcers.
Okay, so
die.
Okay, so folks, that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of ring announcers. We want to know yours because this is very important.
Yeah,
it really matters.
So important.
So start the arguments about it on Facebook. But in the meantime, Quinn, when we get back, it's getting hot in here.
So take off all your clothes. What?
Back after this.
White trash and rednecks, the following contest is a non-titles knockout handicap match scheduled for one fall. What that mean is 4-on-1. Introducing first.
What do you think about that?
Sean Joan, Bolt, Rush, and the Slip Randy. How am I supposed to know what their names are? You got three and a TNA knockout champion! Awesome! Kong! The group known as Confucius!
I believe that's Contourage.
Contourage right there, here they come.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. Quinn, it's time for our last segment. We are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
It's getting a little hot in here. You know, it's...
Yeah. Take my coat off or something.
I know why. We're reviewing Sunday Night Heat.
Oh, are we?
We are.
Wow.
Now, folks, Sunday Night Heat, if you were a fan in the Attitude Era, this was
wrestling.
Of wrestling.
Yeah.
This was a big deal when it was promoted and debuted.
Yes, it was a huge deal. I remember thinking, wow, there's going to be wrestling on Sunday night before I go to school. It's going to be great.
It was going to be great because you got your Monday wrestling, right? You loved Raw.
Yeah.
Why not have more wrestling the day before Raw?
Yeah, and you even had Saturday night on Saturday, so like the weekend was jam-packed now with wrestling.
It was beautiful, and if you liked both promotions too, you had Thunder on Thursday. Thunder.
Yeah.
But, no, but Sunday Night Heat was a one-hour show on the USA Network.
Yes.
And it debuted on August 2nd, 1998. Now, a brief history of Heat is it ran on USA until, remember in late 2000, they switched Raw from USA to TNN?
Yeah, Spike or whatever they call it now.
They switched Sunday Night Heat to MTV.
Right.
In the year 2000.
So that was because MTV was in the same like family of networks as Spike. So
Yes. Viacom, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So it was on MTV for a few years. Then it went to TNN for a little while.
Right.
And then it was web only. And it was on, believe it or not, as a web only show until 2008.
Yeah, before WWE Network. And this was, from my understanding, it had something to do with they were done with the show, but the American contract had expired, but they had other like locations like
UK.
Canada, UK, or whatever. So they were still obligated to film the damn thing.
So they just put it on their website.
Right, for the American fans, because they were like, well, we got this crap. It's like, just put it on here.
But it didn't start out as crap, Quinn.
No, it didn't. I mean, they wanted it to be good, I guess.
It was a very auspicious debut. In fact, we are reviewing the first episode of Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah, usually we don't touch these first episodes. But Sunday Night Heat was interesting at the beginning because it actually was, like, I guess, planned to be a thing.
It planned to be a thing. It was live.
Yeah.
Which was crazy, right? Because Raw
Sunday.
Was live. Yeah, Raw was live most of the time.
Sunday night.
Sunday night live wrestling.
Yeah, weird.
So let's get right into it, Quinn. As we get to the original intro here, you told me we're heating it up.
Yep, we're heating up here. It's like NBA Jam, and the Sunday night is going to be heat. I don't know.
You said the intro looked like crap.
Yeah, it does. It's like all these just junky, fast clipping. Like, it looks like the DX entrance or whatever.
Your favorite.
Like, yeah, it's like, just too much crap happening. Flames everywhere, and like
Mark Henry.
Like, Undertaker, like, doing his lights thing, and it's stupid.
So, right as soon as we get to the arena, Vince wanders out.
Yeah.
And he introduces the world officially, once and for all, to Shane McMahon.
Why did he need to introduce him? Wasn't he known by now?
No, he wasn't. That's the thing, is he hadn't officially been formally on screen as a character at this
point. Well, I knew him as a ref at this point.
Well, yeah, we all knew him as a ref, okay. But anyway, so he comes out to the Heat music with a couple of ladies.
A couple of beautiful ladies. Well, they're headed our way, King. Hey, King.
this
couple of young ladies.
Yeah, these girls are really young. They're really small. Like
small.
They are.
They're young.
And
yes.
It just goes and it starts this whole like this show's kind of smutty thing.
That's a recurring theme here. You actually said to me, "What is this?"
Yeah, I was so confused because
I don't remember this at all.
Well, they're going on and on about these girls,
yes.
And they're like going to sit with us on commentary the whole show.
It's amazing
with mics,
yeah, it's
live
so good.
Mics.
So this is how this starts. JR and King are at the table, and JR's like, "Oh, I didn't know Shane McMahon was coming out here.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be here." So then Shane comes over, he saunters over to the announce table, puts on a headset, and he's immediately annoying, by the way. He actually would go on to be annoying for nearly 20 years and counting.
Ah, come on, he's not that bad anymore.
Yeah, JR, welcome to Sunday Night Heat, what's going on?
He is still annoying.
He's a nice guy, though, in real life.
Nice man.
I like him.
So he and the ladies both get their mics. King, of course, is already like, oh, wow!
Yeah, King is like in full puppies mode, and like, the girls are like making stray comments.
They don't even I don't know who they are.
Yeah, they're just some they might have been Shane's like actual like people he went to high school with or
for
something.
All we know.
I know. I'm serious.
We don't know who these women are, but they're there the entire show. But we actually get a pretty interesting opening contest here, Quinn. It is Edge very early on.
Yeah.
You think you know him?
Yeah, they ask us the question in his music, do you think you know me, a million times. And
he's fighting Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, this is like when they wanted Edge to be a single star, but didn't know what to do with him.
You're pretty much right.
Like, he was just kind of there.
He was almost, you know what he kind of reminded me of? I don't know if they were going for this or not, but with the long hair and the gothic and the dark, were they trying to make their own Raven?
Maybe. That might have been what it was.
Right? So it's the Jeff Jarrett with Tennessee Lee, so just no.
And he still has the shitty attire, the whole like the strappy straps on his chest.
And he's also got really big pyro too.
Yeah, and he's just some bizarre remnant of the new generation.
I never got what the point was here and whose idea that was, because when Jeff Jarrett left the WWF in 95, Quinn.
Yeah.
And then came back and left right again in early 96.
Right.
He resurfaced in WCW as the same Jeff Jarrett attire, but they totally downplayed the country gimmick, right?
Yes.
He wore the attire, but he wasn't like Mr. Country.
Right.
Then he comes back to WWF in late 97 with the Aztec Warrior costume.
For like a second, with the orange boots and all that crap. With
yeah.
NWA.
The NWA version. But during that era, he had always like shat on his old persona.
Yes.
He was like, I'm not no country music guy anymore.
I'm a wrestler.
Yeah. Then he goes back to it.
Yeah, with Tennessee Lee, which is Colonel Robert Parker.
And a waste of him.
Yeah, a waste, because I always thought he was funny.
Rob Parker in WCW and probably down in his own territory.
Well, you know, we reviewed that territory.
Yeah, is awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
He's a talented guy. From what I understand, Mick Foley wrote about him in his book, a really nice guy.
Yeah, everyone liked him.
And a great talker, fun, entertaining, like nothing too serious. Don't worry about it being serious or hard-hitting.
Right.
Just fun.
Yeah, you just know, super fun guy.
The whole Sherry Martel thing in WCW.
And just his whole like cadence and mannerisms in WCW in general.
But here, they gave him a stupid name.
Yeah.
Tennessee Lee. Really?
I mean, it's just basically like Colonel Rob Parker, just a different name.
But they put him with Jeff Jarrett. And by this point, I remember watching as a fan, I was like, why is Colonel Rob Parker here?
Yeah.
And why does Jeff Jarrett still look like
well,
that?
Well, the thing with the Colonel Parker gimmick is it didn't fit in with the Attitude Era. That was really the big problem. And it's a shame because he's funny and stuff.
He is.
But, like, it fit more in with WCW.
It just
did. Even in WCW's, like, edgy era, it made sense that he was there.
Yeah, because he was never really involved with the NWO. He just did his own thing in the corner
there.
Well,
he would cower to the NWO, too.
So, anyway, we see the ladies and Shane at the announce table, and they have the best graphic on. It says,
it's so good.
Shane McMahon and friends.
Yes, it's awesome.
They're part of the show, folks.
They're so smart back then. That's like, you know, someone thought of that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Shane McMahon and friends.
Yeah.
So, anyway, to the match here, Jarrett attacks a start, but Edge takes over with a flapjack and a spear, not called so by name.
Yep, not yet, at least.
Nope. Jack Doan is the ref, by the way. Jarrett throws Edge to the outside and baseball slides into him. The girls on commentary say nothing important.
No, they're like, punching. Like, that's literally all they do the whole show.
It's true.
And they barely talk, but when they do, it's always like if the wrestlers like get close to them, they're like, protect us.
We have him.
King of all, I'm a heavy
man. Hey, there you go. Now you're talking.
I was going to say, they look like they're in pretty good hands with Shane there, JR.
I'm sure they are.
Reverse Russian leg sweep by Jarek, and he goes for a flying crossbody, but Edge rolls through for two.
Yeah.
You were hoping that was it, Quinn. You were hoping that
was
the finish.
Yeah, this is okay, enough. Like, and this show, by the way, I know it might be spoiling it, but there's a lot of matches on this show.
There's a lot of matches. They were really trying to start this off with a bang here.
So now, I'm surprised at the length of some of the stuff on this.
I know. This is long. One of these girls, apparently, we find out, was a Playboy lingerie model.
Yes. And they showed the magazine and everything. And JR's like, so you're naked?
Oh, that means you were naked?
No, JR. It's lingerie. There's clothes on. Like, seriously, that happens.
And then a makeup person comes out and puts makeup on Shane.
Right.
Which I don't understand why, like, if that was supposed to be kayfabe or
I think it was supposed to be like, oh, look at this rich asshole. Like,
okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he's getting his makeup changed.
I need some makeup. I'm Shane. What the ass is happening in the show?
I don't know. There's so much going on. It's like you got these Playboy girls and, like, these guys wrestling, but they're not really paying attention to that. They're like, look at these girls.
Right.
And JR's like, oh, so slutty. And King's like, puppies. And so there's, like, a sensory overload.
So Edge with a snap suplex for two, and then he does another one, and then a really crappy, like, face-busting thing.
Jeff Jarrett looks all shitty here.
Yeah, because he's just getting his ass kicked,
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, Edge is really good against him. Like, he's killing him.
Kicking his ass. So then they go in for the old roadie Jeff Jarrett spot,
right.
You know, where Jarrett lost the title to Shawn.
Right. So what that is Jarrett calls the spot to
Tennessee Lee
says, okay, I'm going to send him over to you, but he gets reversed. But Tennessee Lee, because he's looking the other way because he doesn't want the ref to know.
Uh-huh. He hooks the leg.
He hooks the leg, but it's Jeff Jarrett.
Exactly.
Reversed.
So Edge gets the win, and then Jarrett kind of shoves Lee and leaves the ring. That would actually lead, Quinn, to them breaking up very shortly.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's sad because that's the last Parker ever was involved in anything.
But it did lead to Jeff Jarrett cutting his hair and then hitting people with a guitar for 20 years.
And teaming with Owen Hart.
And never drawing a dime.
Yeah. Yep. never drew a dime.
He broke 6,000 guitars, never drew a dime.
So then Mario Lopez, that's right, AC Slater from Pacific Blue is here.
Yeah.
Remember that great show? Did you watch it, though? Admit
The bike cops?
Baywatch on bikes. It was
the
same thing.
I watched the premiere episode, I think, because WWF was like, it's so good!
Yeah, that's why I did, too. It was okay. I mean, it wasn't good.
Wasn't there wrestlers on it or something?
I remember Triple H on it. I think The Rock? I don't remember.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
No, The Rock was on Star Trek. Remember
he
had
the Voyager.
Yeah, he had the eye. He had like a third eye in his head or something.
The people's third eye.
Yeah.
So then we get a promo for, I guess, like, come see the WWF live.
Yeah, Omaha, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Moline.
Great. What great cities. No offense if you're from any of them.
Yeah.
We're from the New York area, so forgive us.
No, but I do remember these ads, like the whole calendar shown on the screen.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
Like, so, I don't know. It was a nice little blast from the past, if you will.
Blast, yeah. DX is here, so are you ready?
Great. Fantastic, DX.
But it's not all of DX. It's just Triple H, X-Pac, and China.
Yeah,
and
X to the P to the A to the C, as he says.
And her weird dress thing that China's wearing.
So it's like, not like, it's like a bathing suit biking thing. Like, I don't know.
Strange.
It's weird because China doesn't usually look all ladylike like that. So it's
not
like,
98.
Yeah, it's very weird looking.
And they're here to be interviewed by King.
Wonderful.
I found that weird because I didn't realize that they were still doing in-ring interviews.
I guess they were.
By that point in 98. Because usually by then, it was you just come out with the mic and talk. There usually wasn't someone in there talking.
Yeah, and don't they make fun of like King, like saying he's like dressed like Liberace or something? Like,
yeah, Triple H does this whole stupid Michael Buffer thing, speaking of it, you know, blah, 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 let's get ready to suck it. Quinny said to me, you hated that Triple H was the leader of DX.
I hate this, because the whole thing is like this jabroni, who basically was like a Shawn Michaels goon, he almost lucks into this because Shawn Michaels gets hurt. Like, there was probably no plan to have Triple H lead DX ever.
I don't know. That's a great question.
Like,
I don't know why.
No one gave a shit about Triple H.
Until Shawn Michaels, no one cared.
And they barely gave a shit when he was his goon.
True.
Like, seriously.
Triple H needed China to help him get a bit of a push.
Right.
Triple H needed Shawn Michaels.
And
Triple
Rick Rude.
Needed Rick Rude, Triple H. Then, later on in his solo career, needed Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a natural charisma, did he?
No.
I mean,
it would develop later, but not
he had a
here.
Developed charisma.
He was way off at this point.
You're absolutely right. So King asks X-Pac here about their match tomorrow on Raw against Triple H, where the winner meets The Rock at SummerSlam. I'll tell you the truth. I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember that being how we got there.
Right.
But I guess it sounds like there was something going on where Vince McMahon was trying to break up the
DX. Yeah, Vince was pitting them against each other.
Right.
So, yeah, he says X-P-A-C. I don't really think we need this word spelled out. It's Pac.
Triple H and X-P-A-C are nothing but pros.
He says Vince can suck something. I think he means it, you know? Then Triple H like goes into the whole history of DX about how we did what we wanted, and we kicked asses, and we showed our asses,
Yeah, and what's up with his horrible sunglasses? He's got these weird, like, tiny glasses that are like orange.
He looks like Ozzy Osbourne,
like an idiot is what he looks like. He needs to go away. I've had enough of him.
So because it's 1998, Triple H is like, all right, let's get some tits in the crowd.
Yeah, this was weird.
Yeah, this was weird, actually. He's like, we want to see the goods.
Who wants to see the goods?
Let's see the goods!
So girls just start flashing him. My goodness, my virgin eyes, Quinn.
Yeah. So this starts, right? And I'm thinking these girls are plants, right?
Right.
But then the first one flashes, and then the girl next to her flashes, which I think they're the plants.
But then
he points to another, like, just random part in the crowd, and they point the camera, and there's just some random girl, like, decides to do it too, and they show it, and they put the sensor thing on.
I am never going to be the same after seeing this, because my eyes, Quinn.
You're ruined.
I'm just ruined now.
Yeah.
This is 1998, though, and by the way, King is just hopping around the ring this whole time.
Oh, he's being, like, the comedic, like... like a cartoon.
And Shane's getting all happy too at ringside.
Aren't we near the point where that one time where like Sable like took her shirt off and then King like on his tippy toes like
we're right
like
past
zoomed
it.
into her boobs.
We're right past that. You know what? I just realized this. This show needs a produced by Vince Russo credit.
Yeah, it should have just said that at the opening.
Because we're, what, a quarter of the way in, and we already have all the Russo trademarks, right?
We had these basically like these Playboy bunnies at the beginning, and then these girls taking their shirts off.
Suck it, right? Suck it. Suck it. All this stuff. And no one cared about the wrestling match that was in the ring. That's Vince Russo.
There
era.
Was one match and no one cared.
No one cared. And that's a theme. No one cares about any of these matches.
Yeah.
Because as Vince Russo would always say, you know, bro, you need to keep people from changing the channel.
I am not going to give the viewer one opportunity to switch off this show and see what's going on Nitro.
Well, I mean, who's going to change it when this kind of stuff's going on? You know, you literally don't know what's going to happen.
Plus, what are you going to turn on? 60 Minutes?
Yeah, on Sunday night. Yeah.
What are you going to watch?
Yeah, so, you could go watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for free.
For free, it's just on USA
Network. You don't have to go on the internet or anything weird.
So, hey, you want to buy the limited edition Austin 316 baseball jersey? It's only $39.99 plus $9 shipping and handling.
How about no? $9 shipping. Are they serious?
It's a shirt.
Yeah.
Why is it so expensive?
How heavy is it? Like, how many packing peanuts extra do they have to put in it to get it to $9 shipping and handling?
And why Austin never played baseball?
Yeah, I don't.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's like
really
you
stupid.
Want the Rock bowling shirt?
This is like a guy who drives like a truck and a four-wheel, and he doesn't care about baseball.
No, he's never like, oh man, I really want the Rangers to win.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid.
Welcome to Draza's world. What?
Yeah,
what was
this? It's like the real world, you know, like, and it's even filmed. I will say this. It's a clever vignette. The way it's shot, like, very to the point, like, exactly how real world is.
Here's the thing, though. I watched this live, and I watched, I swear, every episode of Raw in 1998.
Too. Yeah.
I do not have any memory of Draws' world. These were vignettes they ran. But
designed to teach you about Draws, basically.
Draws had debuted already as Puke.
Yes.
And now he was phasing over to Draws.
Yeah.
Darren Drozdoff. We see him puking on Mark Henry.
Right. While they're like practicing or something.
It was before they had OVW, but it was like whatever dojo they used to call.
It was probably in the basement of Titan.
Seriously, Vince's garage.
Yeah.
And Tom Pritchard's like chuckling about it.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, why?
They were like,
Tom
it was so funny when he puked on Mark Henry.
Had little chunks in it too, you know, like beans and corn.
Who cares?
And then we get to see Draws' ass tattoos.
Wonderful.
I really wanted to. Our next match is the Headbangers and Draws versus Kai and Tai. Now, in case anyone listening isn't familiar with any of the things I just mentioned, the Headbangers were Mosh and Thrasher, and they were kind of like supposed to be like
grunge sort of
metal thrash guys.
Now, I will say this about them. They were kind of ahead of their time because when they debuted, they didn't have characters like this. Like
true.
That they were like grunge metal guys or whatever.
Well, Radford.
Yeah, but I mean, like, these guys were like they seemed like the real deal.
Yeah, they wore dresses and everything.
Yeah. But by 98, they actually like make sense.
It made sense.
Yeah, like they made like so they don't look out of place at all.
No, and I know you're not a big Headbangers fan, but
they're fine.
You got to give them credit. They were a solid tag team.
Oh, yeah. They were reliable. They were always there. They gave a pretty decent match. They weren't bad or anything.
It's not like they won a lot. They usually put people over. They were okay. And they're teaming with Draws versus Kai and Tai. Now, Kai and Tai had come over from Japan earlier in 98.
Yes.
They were, in Japan, awesome. They were called Kai and Tai DX. No relation to D-Generation X.
Just another.
It was just their name.
DX, I guess.
And they had Taka Michinoku with them in Japan.
Right.
He had yet to join them here in WWF. He was still a face.
There's like Dick Togo. And
Dick Togo and Funaki and then the other guy, Terry Boy, but I forget his other name.
Terry Boy.
Yeah, but I forget his other name.
Yeah,
Men's Toa or something like that. But anyway, they were Men's Teo. They were great wrestlers for what they were.
They were really good.
They really were.
They were like midgets compared to like everyone in the WWE.
In the WWF.
And not only that, they had Mr. Yamaguchi-san.
Wally Yamaguchi, yeah.
Yes, and he is like the tiniest man I've ever met. Like, he might be up to my chest in like real life.
And the way they played up their characters, look, I would never accuse an upstanding man like Vince McMahon of anything nefarious, but I feel like there might have been a tiny particle of racism here.
Yes.
Okay, good. It's not just me.
I mean, so...
Woo!
So let's get into it here. They basically were going into the choppy, choppy pee-pee angle.
Yeah, we get a recap of that whole thing where Mr. Yamaguchi-san. Son. He has a wife.
Right.
And Val Venus is having Val Venus and friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mrs. Yamaguchi-san.
Yeah, is like very friendly with Val Venus.
Like, she has decided that I'm not going to put up with this midget anymore.
She doesn't want the sashimi anymore.
Yeah.
Okay?
She wants the hashimi. I don't know what the bigger version of that is, but
so to demonstrate his discomfort and anger with this,
yeah,
Mr. Yamaguchi-san has a table on the Titantron. This is a recap we're watching.
Yeah.
With a big salami.
Yeah, huge-ass salami.
And a big sword that they call a Ginsu knife later.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm going to choppy-choppy your pee-pee!
Yeah, so he does that. But, you know, now Miss Yamaguchi-san is sleeping with Val Venus.
Yes, Mrs. Yamaguchi-san is sleeping with Val Venus.
Right.
So Venus comes out.
He comes out. By the way, I noted this to you at the time. I love Val Venus's video. It's like the first thing you see is like a screw going into a hole.
What does that mean, Quinn?
I don't know. Let's let our fans figure it out.
If you guys know what that means, let us know. So Venus comes.
Yes.
With Mrs. Yamaguchi.
And he's like groping her or something.
She's so like over the top. Quinn, you did say to me, though, this match might be 5 stars.
Well,
but
it's got Japanese guys in it, but unfortunately draws. Yeah.
We'll have to see.
Yeah.
So, look, here's the deal with this match, okay? As if you care. It's floppy tag wrestling here, and no one cares about because it's 1998, and the main angle is someone chopping someone's dick off.
Right.
You get it?
That is pretty fascinating. Will he do it?
You have 5 out of the 6 very talented wrestlers. Draws was okay.
Yeah.
Headbangers are pretty good. Kanetai's great.
Yeah.
But it's 1998, so no one gives a shit. They're all interested in the porn star guy maybe getting his dick cut off because he's hooking up with the Japanese man's young wife.
Right.
That's 1998.
Now, we looked her up. She's not too young.
We did look her up.
You thought she was like 16. I'm like, what are you talking about? They like did this whole thing where she was like in bed with him. Like, she was 23 years old. She was perfectly like of age. Like,
fine. Anyway, JR here calls the face team the Jersey Trio.
Yeah, which what? I didn't remember anyone ever calling them that.
I knew the Headbangers were from Jersey. I forgot Draws was, but he is.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Yamaguchi gets rubbed by the Venus on the outside. So Shane mentions how Mr. Yamaguchi is going to use that Ginsu and he's going to choppy choppy. Meanwhile, this is a match.
Yeah.
Oh, also, King isn't at the table anymore, by the way, because HR told him to leave, according to JR.
Wait, I didn't hear that. Is that real?
Yeah. Well, while that was happening, you were looking up, Mrs. Yamaguchi-san's
age. Yeah, I was trying
to
figure out, like, is this, like, legal right now?
Mike Kyoto's the ref, by the way.
Yeah.
And Draws gets a sit-out powerbomb for the win. 4.5 stars, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a Japanese match, so
yeah.
I only take off the 3 quarter stars for that.
Yeah.
For the draws.
So the Venus here slides down the ramp, but doesn't get it up into the ring. He does, however, shove Mario Lopez out of the way.
What is this? I don't know. First of all, okay, hold on. He sends Mrs. Yamaguchi-san, right? Who I'm assuming is like in love with him, right? And K-Fob. So he sends her back, right? So now she's not looking.
Right.
So then he goes and tries to seduce like Cornelius or whatever her name is. Outside.
Amy Hunter Cornelius from Pacific Blue.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just
like, what kind of asshole is this? Well, he's supposed to be the face?
This is my thinking, Quinn. And this could be a stretch. I think he wants to have sex with her. So Slater here says, hey, Preppy, and then he hops the ramp.
Basically, I mean, literally, that's what happens. Like,
he hops over the guardrail.
He's an upstanding gentleman.
He tackles Val Venus to the ground.
Yeah, he makes Val Venus look like an idiot.
It's amazing.
Like, that would never happen in the 80s.
No, never.
Like, a celebrity getting, like, he actually, like, Val didn't get any revenge.
Nothing.
Like, nothing.
No, and, you might say that's a little bit of shrinkage there for the Venus.
Yeah. How did he explain this to Mrs. Yamaguchi-san afterwards?
Let's recap Tit Fest 98 from Fully Loaded, Quinn.
Right.
This is
what is this show? Like, we just got done with the Mrs. Yamaguchi-san and the screw and Mario Lopez
and
like
salami or bologna
fighting over
cut.
Cornelius, and now we're on to Tit Fest.
Yeah. So Tit Fest. This was from Fully Loaded 98, the pay per view where Jacqueline and Sable had a bikini contest.
And basically her boobs are bigger and Sable wins.
That was the line of thinking, right?
Right.
Now this, for the record, I want to mention this. This is a very important point if you're keeping track at home, everybody.
Yeah.
this is where the King officially became perverted on TV. From that moment forward that Quinn alluded to earlier.
Yeah, with the tiptoes.
Table. Yeah. Where Sable takes off her shirt.
And the handprints.
To reveal the painted on handprints. And King is like, all of a sudden, like Daffy Duck.
Yeah. He's,
you know,
yeah, he's just like, wah!
You can blame that moment for King being the way he was the rest of his career.
And not the rest of it. I mean,
until about 04.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, that it didn't last forever.
Well, when you get to be like near 60, it becomes embarrassing to be like that, okay?
Okay.
Unless you're
fair,
Mick Jagger.
Fair enough.
So anyway, this is a recap that we're watching, a video package.
It's amazing, by the way.
Then we get some sad music.
Yeah, like the...
because we find out that Vince disqualified Sable for wearing the body paint. Vince then wanders out, gets really creepy, and says that Sable is allowed to stay employed as long as she doesn't become an ungrateful bitch.
What the hell?
Okay, first of all, why does Vince have anything to do with her, like, in kayfabe?
Yes.
At this point. Second of all, incidentally,
yeah,
becoming an ungrateful bitch is precisely what she would do the following year when she left.
Okay, in her defense, she was, like, far removed from this angle at that point. Like,
I'm just saying.
Like, yeah, it's ironic, but it's also like, who cares? Like,
you know what? Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It's Sable. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we get D'Lo Brown with Mark Henry. They're still in the Nation at this
D'Lo
point.
And D'Lo doing like the awesome like head bob, like with
European champion,
with the chest protector. Like he's in full like D'Lo is awesome mode.
I'll tell you what, I was on the D'Lo Brown bandwagon.
Me too.
Throughout 98.
He is good.
Into 99, and then when he injured Draws, they de-pushed him.
Right. Oh, badly. And he never was a thing ever again.
And it was an accident, too, which is the sad part.
It's somebody threw something or whatever. It was not his fault. I don't get it.
It's just sad. Something happened, and he just messed up a powerbomb and injured Draws and actually paralyzed him from the waist down. And it's sad because D'Lo Brown, honestly, was on the up.
He was on the cusp of like something
stardom
big.
Here.
Yeah, like big deal.
He had the charisma.
Yeah.
He had this innate talent to connect with the audience and
right.
being likable.
And this is a guy that came from being like just a guy that stood in the background for the Nation of
the
Domination.
Nation, yeah.
He built him all by himself, too. This is like, he was one of the hardest working men in the Attitude Era. Like,
excellent wrestler, too.
Great
he
wrestler.
He was really
He's
good.
He's good at everything.
He was an excellent, excellent talent. It's a shame what happened to both him and Draws, obviously.
Yeah, both guys, it sucks.
But what are you going to do?
Nobody won out of that situation.
Nobody won. But these are happier times when you've got European champion D'Lo with his chest protector and Mark Henry, so underappreciated by us back in 98.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
He's so good.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
Quinn and I, when we turned about 30 recently, within the last year or two, we had this like epiphany that Mark Henry was good this entire time.
Right. And it wasn't just like, you know, since the salmon coat or in like all the like things that people think of how Mark Henry's good now.
He was good ever since he turned heel.
He was always good.
He was always good.
Yeah.
His feud with Vader, remember in 98?
Yeah, just go look back. Like, it's stunning. Like, it's like, how did we miss this?
He's so freaking fun.
Brainerism and, like, all that crap.
He's just a big, fat, strong guy, I guess, right?
Yeah,
he's both.
But he's funny, too.
He's funny. He's just like, you know?
Yeah,
love
excellent.
Him. Love him. So D'Lo is fighting here, believe it or not, the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, for
and
the European title.
Yeah, and I ask you here, is like, how's D'Lo going to beat Ken Shamrock? Is like Mark Henry going to sit on him or something? Like, seriously, like, I was forgetting, honestly, because back then, titles just, you know, they just moved around. It didn't fucking matter.
Very true.
And so, like, I thought, are they going to do a title change on Heat on, like, the first episode?
Wouldn't be past the point of possibility, right?
Yeah.
But for the record, because this is right where Shamrock started changing his tights.
Mm-hmm.
He's still got the red here.
Yeah, so he's like still a big deal. The red was when he was getting the push.
The blue is when he was on the downturn
and
then he turned heel.
Yeah,
exactly. Timmy White is the referee.
Mm-hmm.
And Shamrock dominates, of course, to start. But D'Lo
should.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he honestly is an MMA guy fighting wacky D'Lo.
Yeah, big goofy D'Lo.
Yeah.
D'Lo does manage to throw him into the outside, but then Henry just casually walks by with a clothesline.
Awesome.
Mark Henry is awesome.
He's great. Yeah.
Dan Severn then wanders out in a very snazzy suit.
Yeah, but he has... I hate when people do this. And, you know, if you do this, fine. I don't like when people wear a black coat with, like, the khaki pants or whatever. And that's like what Dan Severn's wearing. It's like he's not exactly snazzy. He just looks like a big brute in a suit.
Big brute in a suit. Yeah. Also, Steve Blackman wanders out with,
yeah, but just like,
you know, no shirt.
Just no shirt and his like regular like
karate
gym
pants
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, gym pants is even better. Why are they even out here, Quinn? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Is it just like, hey, let's get three like martial art guys?
I think what they were setting up for here, and we were basically blowing the finish, but like they're basically setting up like, look at all these MMA guys are going to fight each other, basically.
Which, you know what's weird? To the best of my knowledge, Quinn,
what?
Shamrock and Severn never fought in WWE.
Which is a shame, because that's actually like, if they did a shoot style fight, like that's the only thing Dan Severn's good for. He sucks. Like, otherwise.
Didn't he wear like a gray sweatshirt a lot when
he
wrestled?
Yeah, he wore a lot of belts too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, motherfucker, Dan Severn! Best thing ever! Big belly-to-belly by Shamrock, but the chest protector actually hurts him as well.
Right,
which
awesome.
The announcers don't pick up on.
Yeah, we noticed it, because they're both knocked out like randomly after, and it's like, well, the chest protector,
it hurts Shamrock too. So then Shamrock busts out a Hurricanrana.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Like, more like a Frankensteiner.
It was a good one,
yeah.
It was actually really good. D'Lo rolls out and then goes outside and shoves Severn, so he jumps in.
Yeah.
D'Lo wins by DQ. Then Shamrock gets all mad at Severn, so Blackman's trying to keep the peace, and Quinn, you said to me, Severn sucks.
Yeah, Severn, he does suck, and he shouldn't even be here. Like, all, honestly, like,
I know,
I'd rather just watch, like, Ken Shamrock fight Steve Blackman. Like,
well,
I like Steve Blackman.
Happened.
Yeah.
I like Blackman, too.
Yeah, he's not bad. That's a guy, if there was like ever like an underrated segment again or anything like that. Like, Steve Blackman was good.
He was good.
He was good.
He actually was.
He could even have fun, like the whole like, I'm serious, but like put a goofy hat on my head or whatever.
That was
like,
the whole point of him, right?
Yeah, that was why he was cool.
Yeah, because he was supposed to be like serious
just,
and boring.
Yeah, he just went with the flow, though. Like, he would just go with whatever.
I agree with you. I like Blackman. Shane's lady friends are still at the table, by the way, this whole show, like we said. And then Shamrock just beats up the steps with the chair.
He snaps.
Yeah, he
like,
snaps.
Was this like, he had already snapped at this point.
Oh, yeah, way before.
So, like, basically, whenever Shamrock lost, he would, like, do this, I'm snapping. And the girls are like, ah, man! Like, basically, like, seriously.
Yeah.
All whiny.
Then we get a SummerSlam promo. It's a Highway to Hell, Quinn, 4 weeks away.
Yeah, with the music, because this is unedited.
That's right. So anyway, here we've got SummerSlam coming up, and then we get another promo. It's some other girl from Pacific Blue, or Pac Blue.
Yeah.
Talks to Bart Gunn, and then Quinn tells me never call it
Pac Blue. Yeah, never. Like that.
Sorry.
Bullshit. I hate when they do this with shows where they try to give like a short nickname.
Yeah.
I hate it so much.
Especially when it's a show that didn't last that long.
It's about biker cops. Get out of here.
Bicycle cops, you should say.
Well, they were biking.
But not even bikers like, rum, rum, you know, more like pedal, pedal.
Yeah. Who cares? Mario Lopez.
Hey, Preppy.
Yeah.
Then we get a nice clip of Bart Gunn knocking out Dr. Death.
This is so good, because as we had talked about in the Why Did They Bother with Brawl for All, like, nobody expected this. Dr. Death looked like shit. Like, it was like, he's my boy. He's so good, right? And he just gets his ass handed to him. And the best part about this, it's almost like insult to injury. Like, the Pacific Blue girl is, like, crawling over Bart Gunn because he beat him. She's like, oh, it was so sexy when he knocked out Dr. Death. I'm like, fuck yeah, like, Bart Gunn deserves it. That asshole thought he was so damn good, and like, you know, nobody cares. Bart Gunn is the one to do it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Quinn and I, when this came on and they showed the clip of Dr. Death,
we just started laughing.
Yeah, we just started laughing like we're doing now. So Austin is backstage watching this and drinking. That's a good plan.
Like, depressingly. Like, he's like by himself drinking beers. He's not even like excited.
I'm gonna watch this damn match here.
It's like he looks like an alcoholic back there. He doesn't look like he's drinking for fun.
He's having a Steve Weiser. That, you know what? That's not what the name of the beer was. I don't know. Like, is that like a, could you buy Steve Weiser in the store?
You might now, because he owns like his own like brew or whatever.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you can buy a Stone Cold Austin beer, whatever. It's
real.
Yeah,
but it's not like an, it's not like a Budweiser type of beer.
No,
is it?
It's like an IPA. He's very proud of
so
it.
So out of character.
Go listen to his show. Well, actually, he, this is a side tangent, but Steve, like, he will go on about how, you know, I didn't like IPAs, but, you know, a friend of mine turned me on to them a couple years ago. Yeah, he really, like, says this all the time.
They are good beers.
Yeah.
IPAs are great.
Yeah, Austin is now, like, he switched from, like, his, like, Miller Lite days. Like, he's now onto the IPAs.
You know what was always very interesting, too, about Austin's beer choices?
Mm-hmm.
He would always say Steve Weiser.
Yeah, but he always drank like Coors Light or something.
Thank you. I'm glad. Yeah. This is why Quinn and I have been doing this.
Yeah, it's true, though.
So anyway, we got a very strange
main event, pretty much.
Main event here with a lot of star power. I'll run it down for you. You've got Kane and Mankind.
Right.
With Paul Bearer, of course, teaming up against The Rock and Owen Hart.
Yeah, and the winner gets to face the tag team champions of Austin and Undertaker. I didn't even remember this.
Yeah,
like,
isn't
I was
that
like,
crazy?
When did this freaking happen? How many times did Austin win the tag title with some random person?
Every time.
Yeah.
Dude Love, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, just the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
Or it might end there. Either way, he won it too many times.
Yeah.
So we get a big Rocky Sucks chant. You know what's very interesting about this?
Mm-hmm.
The Rock was only about a month away from unofficially turning face the first time.
With the guy with the cooking in the crowd. At
yeah,
Survivor
the cooking Series. Guy, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what happened with The Rock's trajectory here is right after SummerSlam, the fans were like, all right, he lost the title, hell of a ladder match, we love The Rock.
Right, like, it's like, fuck Triple H. Like,
yeah, pretty much, yeah. Right. It was. That was like the downturn of DX and the upswing of The Rock.
Right.
Was right around SummerSlam. So The Rock was like, and I'm just doing this because, honestly, it's nice to provide some context for the fans at home. The Rock became an unofficial face, meaning he never really did anything to make him a face.
It's just people liked him. That's
so,
it.
Yeah, so he was just
organic.
Cheered. Yep.
Yeah.
And that lasted until the Survivor Series, of course. And then he officially stayed heel or turned heel or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
At Survivor Series.
Basically, yeah.
So
and
then,
honestly, there's some very important information coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Like after this, like on the crawl, the bottom thing, it says La Femme Nikita and Pacific Blue.
Oh, wow.
Tonight.
Pac Blue and LFN.
Yeah, shut up. Yeah, La Femme Nikita. Remember that show?
I do, actually, because it was always on after Raw for like a million years.
Texas Ranger was on before.
That's what a Ranger's gotta be.
Right.
When you said to me, this is the best version of Mankind, care to elaborate?
Yeah, the kind where he just is like, no, I'm freaking Mankind now. Like, after he was like done with Dude Love and Cactus Jack, and he had just the like shirt. Like the dress shirt with the tie, but it's not tucked in and it's all like frayed at the end.
Yeah, and he's still a heel here, so he's like half goofy.
Yeah, he's just like a dick too, though.
He's kind of just like withdrawn and dicky. Yeah.
He's awesome.
He is. Mick Foley is awesome in 98.
Yeah, he's so like, he's so many things at this point, and he's great.
He's great. He really, and Kane, this is the best. I know other people like Kane like, at different points in his career. 98 Kane is my favorite.
That's the best Kane.
Yeah. And, I mean, I really think
so. Yeah, I mean, he had some other fun stuff, but he always had, like, brief periods, like, later on with Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan was good.
Or just, like, sometimes...
'02 Kane was good.
Yeah, just other weird stuff he did. Like,
right, but '98 Kane when he was fresh, when he was young.
This was the most prolonged good Kane.
Absolutely. Absolutely was. So, another guy that would be in a face in a month, Quinn, is Mankind. Very interestingly, right after SummerSlam,
things were starting to change here.
Like, things were starting to change, right?
Things were moving on from just Austin as the lone,
like, big
best,
face, right?
Best
MDX,
face,
yeah. MDX. Because what would happen there is Kane and Undertaker wound up being in cahoots. Kane abandoned Mankind.
Right.
Mankind started playing up the goofy, sympathetic character.
Yeah.
And I think what really put it over the top was Mr. Sacco in a couple of months.
Right. And then he had a thing that kids could love, basically.
Launched into the stratosphere. I never thought I would see Mick Foley as world champion.
No, it seemed like unthinkable. He was like monster of the month before that. Like, he wasn't champion of the world.
He was just the guy that usually fought The Undertaker or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like all he was.
It's like, oh, Undertaker's not doing anything. Let's have him fight Mankind.
Right. And the reason I'm saying this, folks, is because this show is actually at the precipice, I guess, of a very weird turn, which would be the latter quarter of 1998 into 1999. This is the end of that, like, I always say this, up to about SummerSlam was the best part of the Russo era. I know Quinn includes Survivor Series, and I can't disqualify that. Survivor Series was good.
Right.
But really, things started to change after the summer here.
We're at, like, Russo peak right now.
We are.
And this show is proof. It's really entertaining, regardless of all the smut and
nonsense. Oh, it's so stupid, but
there's just so much going on.
Yeah, in the same way that last week when we talked about that syndicated superstars from 90.
Yeah.
And that's how you do that.
Right.
And yes, there's no good wrestling, and no, none of it matters. This is the same shit.
Yeah.
This doesn't matter to your life.
Well, it kind of does. I mean, the tag title shot's on the line.
Yeah, I know, but like, even so, the tag titles almost don't matter by this point.
But it's a great fill of an hour.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a fine piece of television. And that's what Vince Russo was good at, delivering a fine piece of television.
Yeah, for all the, and he did do it, for all the wrestling that he shoved to the side, and believe me, he did.
Yeah.
He, I don't know if he liked wrestling.
He did, but he got carried away, that's all.
But he knew how to make up for it to an extent, especially in this heyday, with random shit like Slater tackling Val Venus.
Yeah, that was good.
With Shane having two women with him for no reason the whole show.
And I love that it actually goes through the whole show, because, like, usually they would always find some excuse to make them go away, but, like, that doesn't make any sense in real life. This guy's the son of the owner. Like, if he wants to sit with these girls the whole time, he should be allowed to.
In fact, King is the one that went away.
Yeah. That's funny.
Which is actually very funny. JR with the HR joke.
Yeah.
Like, human resources is like, oh, you better get out of here. Yeah. We don't want you doing anything,
can't trust him around the girls.
I guess back to the match here. We get the Nuska and the Huska by Mankind. Right. You know. Da-da!
Yeah. Huska!
And then Kane tags in for some nice choking. Earl Crappy is the ref, by the way.
Oh, shush.
I should note,
he's fine here.
Earl sucks. Then, now, and forever. I should note, Quinn, that Kane has the double-sleeved attire tonight.
Yes, and, you know, this is because he had the burn marks on him, so obviously. I never understood, though, like, why did he go short sleeves? Wasn't his whole gimmick that his whole body was burned by the Undertaker in some horrific fire?
Yeah, but the whole thing with that whole storyline, one of these days, we should do a whole one-hour special on their whole, like, family history.
Yeah, and then another one-hour special on the entire, like, what's the hierarchy of the WWE and kayfabe?
Yeah. That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for the OVP one-hour specials.
Yeah.
So we get a big Nugget chant.
Mm-hmm.
Nugget, of course, meaning Owen Hart.
Nugget. Nugget.
I feel like that was always kind of affectionate, though, right?
Sort of.
You think that maybe not?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just a little too romantic of me to think that way.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Big top rope clothesline, which I love when he used to do that, by Kane. Mm-hmm. Gets two. As we go to commercial, when we come back, Mankind is getting beat up by Owen and The Rock.
Right.
And as you mentioned, Quinn, the winners of this meet Austin and Undertaker tomorrow, the tag champs.
Right.
You had a very good question for me.
Yeah, why don't they just have the New Age Outlaws be the tag champs as usual? Like, what's with all these mega teams here? Like, this is ridiculous.
You finally see the light, Quinn. No, why I don't this, like when teams like that win the tag champs.
There's a time and a place for that, but I don't know, like, at this period of time, when you have the Outlaws, why the hell are these guys, what happened? How did they even lose the belts?
They lost them to Kane and Mankind.
What happened?
I don't know.
That's stupid.
And Kane and Mankind lost them to Austin and The Undertaker.
And then somehow they've got pawned back off onto that loss,
right? It's just like, I don't remember how exactly, but yeah. It's SummerSlam.
Cool.
98.
Awesome.
Outlaws won them back, and everyone was all happy. It was like, oh, good, finally.
Yeah, back to regular.
They have them again.
Stuff again.
So Kane beats up Owen for a while, but Owen escapes the chokeslam with an enziguri. Nice one. Mm-hmm. And then a big missile drop kick, which Owen's wrestling like a face. I love it. No. Everyone's a heel.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess
The Rock and Owen are more likable.
Yeah, they're more likable. Exactly.
They are.
Yeah, there's no getting around it.
As good of a slimy heel as Owen could play, and he did.
Yeah.
He could also flip that switch and be a sympathetic face like
exactly.
nothing.
Yep.
He was so underrated at that.
Yeah, and you know, if he had lived longer, I'm sure people would like be more reverence for him.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
He was a very talented wrestler.
Right.
Even in this latter part of his career where he didn't care as much.
But I mean, we don't even know. Like, rumor has it is like they could have just, you know, this is obviously they didn't have anything for him because no more Brett.
Yep.
And like, this was like a rebuilding time for Owen.
Yeah, it's not like he was ever really deep pushed. He was always a pretty prominent guy, right?
Right.
In 98, 99.
After he came back after that little break after the Montreal incident, I mean, he was immediately feuding with DX.
That's right. And that lasted for a long time. And then he had a tag run with Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
He did all right.
He did okay.
He honestly did okay. So anyway, Mankind and Kane double team Owen on the outside, but then The Rock runs over. Owen sneaks right back in before the 10 count for the win.
They get the title shot.
Now, The Rock and Owen didn't win the tag title, so what I'm wondering is if somehow the next night on Raw it got changed, because all I know is Kane and Mankind did win them back.
Maybe they got jumped or something at the beginning, because it's back in that time.
Yeah, where it didn't matter.
Even The Rock could get jumped and he'd be just gone for some
reason.
Exactly.
Like, that's true. So anyway, we go backstage with Michael Cole, with Steve Austin, We show a clip of The Undertaker drinking a beer that Austin threw him last Monday.
Says something about how he thought he was thirsty, that he doesn't like
him. Give him a beer. I don't care. I don't know. They were down to me.
I love this because it shows that the Austin character still hasn't like changed yet.
No, he's still
a jerk. Still this guy who doesn't like anybody.
He doesn't like anyone.
Yeah.
Because Michael Cole's like, oh, well, does it mean that you like each other? He's like, no, I just wanted, he drank a beer. I gave it to him. That's it.
Look thirsty, so I tossed him a beer. Don't mean nothing other than that to me. I threw him a damn beer and he drank it. That's all it was.
I wish Austin punched Michael Cole here. He's, like, so dweeby. Like, he sucks.
Well,
he sucks. Like, why?
Austin does call him a jackass at one point.
Can't you just send someone important to go interview him?
Like JR or something?
Yeah.
Oh, Austin, what are you thinking
about? What about King? He's been exiled to the back.
That's true. And then Austin gets all mad because apparently Kane and Mankind attacked him on Monday. But The Undertaker didn't help. And he's like, well, not that I needed their help, but he still didn't help.
I love that he throws in that it's like, I don't need their help, but you know, he should have. Because, like, we're champions. Like, what the fuck?
He's, like, morally upset about it.
Yeah, he's like, it's the principle, like you said. It's like, he's his partner. He probably should have helped, even though Austin doesn't need any help.
Yeah, right. Just to clarify, he doesn't need your help, but why the fuck didn't you?
Yeah.
That's basically his problem. So anyway, he says Cole's starting to piss him off. Well, naturally.
Yeah, I would be pissed to have Michael Cole with a mic in my face at any point in time.
That'll end the promo, and then Shane and JR say goodbye. Quinn, what'd you think of this? This was an interesting little time capsule.
This was an entertaining hour of television. It was fine with this, and it was just a nice time capsule of like WWF during that period of time.
Right, during the one of the heights of the Attitude Era. Not in terms of revenue, you know, so much, or ratings, because they would get better for both of them.
They're better now, not ratings, but revenue-wise. Like, jeez, like,
but in terms of fan interest, and I think, and this is the era where, starting a little bit earlier in the year, the crowd was always hot for everything.
Oh, yeah. There's like 1,000 signs in the crowd during this, by the way. We didn't note that, but there's somebody that has like a sign that's the size of like three rows high.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
This was such a great era for the WWF to be a fan back then.
Yeah.
Unless for whatever reason you just didn't like it, but I think a lot of people did, as evidenced by the ratings.
Yeah. And just the fact that they could put a show on the Sunday night death slot, like live, and like people were like, this is awesome. I want to watch it.
Now, the interesting thing is here, as an epilogue, you know, we went into the network, you know, history of Heat, but the importance of it, you know, was a different story because, yes, this first episode was a big deal. And, and the first several were, I remember that.
They still tried to keep it going.
By the time you hit Halftime Heat, which was January of 99, that was probably the peak of Heat mattering.
Yeah, that was basically it. What do you do after that?
Yeah, then that was the halftime show of the Super Bowl. Sunday Night Heat put on the Rock Mankind match for the
world
title.
Yeah, and it changed hands, too.
It changed hands. By August of 99, so that's about a year after the show started, SmackDown debuts on Thursday nights.
Yeah, now we got three shows, so obviously somebody's got to go.
So Heat basically became the C show.
Yeah.
And if we know anything about any promotion, the C show never matters.
It's always crap. It was always like Al Snow versus Rico or something.
Right.
Like, you know, like just junk.
Yeah, it was
like,
just junk.
Yeah.
So Heat had about a year of mattering.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say maybe about 3 to 6 months of actually really having higher level stuff on it.
Yeah.
Not every show was like this.
No.
Within a few weeks, not every show would be like this.
This was kind of awesome. It was better than some Raws back then. It was really good, like, as it was fast.
Because they only had an hour to get to their point, so it was like, all right, we're doing this, done.
Yeah.
A lot of star power.
Right.
A lot
Tons
of really
star
good stuff.
Power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So overall, I'd say that was one of the better things we've watched. I mean, certainly no good wrestling on it.
No,
but
it was so compelling. Like, it was just like, I just wanted to see what was going to happen next, like, after every segment.
Absolutely. And folks, speaking of what's going to happen next, we want you to tune in to us next week because it's episode number 49. That's right. We are just two more episodes away from the season 5 finale, Quinn, and it's going to be quite a doozy.
Yeah, and get your fan suggestions in for next week because we're going to really be scouring them.
That's right. We are doing all of your suggestions next, not all of them, but all your suggestions next week. Nothing that we pick on our own.
Yeah.
It's all fan requested material next week.
Yes.
Quinn. And you know what? We're going to continue that trend throughout season 6.
Yep.
So keep sending them in. You can do that by going to our website and going to the suggestions page. Of course, reach us on Twitter at OVPPodcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. And of course, go to the Facebook group. Folks, thank you so much for spending episode number 48 with us. We will see you next week for episode number 49.
See ya.
Due to the fact that body substitute a bikini. Mr. McMahon has disqualified Sable from the bikini contest and is declaring Jack Vaughn the winner.
I'm not surprised at all that this happened. I only wish that Mr. McMahon would have been man enough to come and tell me to my face.
You dare question my masculinity? Me, Vince McMahon? You are no longer contractually here in the World Wrestling Federation. Who was the knight in shining armor that came to your rescue? Me. You owe me, Sable. And when people like you owe me, I generally collect. However, your knight in shining armor will allow you to continue to be gainfully employed here in the World Wrestling Federation just as long as you don't become an ungrateful...
Will you stop?